Seats Podcast. I'm your host, John Lord. My guest this afternoon, Ben Zosmer, is a Harvard University senior and writer for The Hollywood Reporter, whose math-based Oscars formula has accurately predicted 75% of the winners for the past 3 years. Ben, welcome to the View My Seats Podcast, and thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me.
So tell us, between a rigorous Ivy League curriculum and broadcasting basketball and football games for the Harvard Crimson, how have you found the time to develop such an accurate Oscars predictor?
Well, there's no doubt that February is my busiest month of the year when the WHRB basketball games are in full swing and the Oscars coming up, and this year writing for the Boston Globe with that. But it works out that the data collection really only needed to be done once. So I got the idea freshman year and basically just holed up in the library for a month gathering an enormous amount of Oscar data. And from there, it's just a question of perfecting the model each year. But for the most part, all the data that I gathered initially is still very useful each year.
So you started this process when you were a freshman. Now, before coming to Harvard, would you consider yourself a movie buff?
Yes, though it really didn't start until after I graduated high school, when it sort of dawned on me that I'd been so busy all those years growing up that I hadn't watched many of the movies that I really would have liked to have seen. So I went back and sort of played catch-up. I've now seen all of the American Film Institute's top 100, and I'm two away on seeing all the best pictures. So I've made myself a film buff, if you will, in recent years.
And when you started to come out with these models, there are a lot of other predictors out there that people look to as far as a way of finding the eventual winners. You know, there are all sorts of gambling houses and betting lines and other models that people look to. How would you say yours differs from some of those other popular models?
So a lot of models are based, at least in some sense, on personal opinion, whether it's the opinion of the person setting the betting lines or the opinion of the critic whom you're listening to. And that's not to take away from that type of model for picking the Oscars. There are a lot of very, very smart people who are experts in the field who follow this. It's just that mine is a different way. And what I'm trying to do is take personal opinion completely out of it. I love many of the movies. I see all the Best Picture nominees every year, but I do my very best to have that have absolutely no effect on my prediction. The whole idea is using things like, which other categories were you nominated in? What are the Rotten Tomatoes scores? Which of the different guilds honored you? Did the BAFTAs and Golden Globes honor you in different categories? Trying to use anything I can put into ones and zeros in order to make a model.
And have you found that there is, let's just say, one part of your formula that is the most accurate aspect of your formula? I'm sure it's just a large, you know, kind of amalgamation of all sorts of different raw data, but is there one number that, or one category in your experience that stands out above the rest?
So it's an interesting question. It's different for different categories. If I had to give you one answer for everything overall, I would say the BAFTAs, the British equivalent of the Oscars. But in different categories, it's different. For picture and director, it's the Directors Guild. For the four acting awards, the Screen Actors Guild, and so on. So it changes for each category which predictors tend to do well and which ones tend to do not so well.
Now, you kind of first made a name for yourself a couple years ago when you were one of the few folks out there who call themselves the Oscars predictors, so to speak, who actually got Meryl Streep right in 2012. A lot of people said that was Viola Davis's award to lose for The Help, and you actually got Meryl Streep right in 2012. What was it about that race, if you can remember, that pointed you towards Meryl Streep's career?
Yeah, that was a fascinating race. So what you had there was Meryl Streep had won both the Golden Globe for Best Actress in a Drama and the BAFTA Award, and Viola Davis for The Help had won the Screen Actors Guild Award. Now, you might catch me and say, Ben, you just said the Screen Actors Guild Awards, they're the best predictors for Best Actress. Well, this is why I use lots of different predictors, because it turned out that the math was saying that the combination of the Golden Globe win and the BAFTA win, along with the other factors I use, actually put Meryl Streep ever so slightly out in front. Because really what the math is doing is it's not so much picking winners and losers, it's stating the percentage that each nominee will win in each category, and the math said that Streep had a very slightly higher percentage than Davis, and it turned out to be correct.
If you had to say, And we're talking with Ben Zosmer, the Oscar predictor for The Hollywood Reporter and Harvard University senior. If you had to say that there was one category this year that we should expect to see perhaps a minor upset, perhaps not at the magnitude of a streep over Viola Davis in 2012, but is there one category right now where your data is somewhat wavering?
Yeah, oh, there's definitely a few. It's tough to say because I sort of think of it as my math is defining the front runners because it's stating the percentages, and then other people might be picking up sets or not. But I'm looking at my results, and there are definitely some where not everyone is on board. Sound mixing is a good example, which happens to be my very closest category. So American Sniper is a favorite there. Interstellar is a favorite there. The math actually says Whiplash by just 2% over American Sniper. So basically a toss-up between those two, but still one that that not everyone's picking. You've got Best Animated Film, where every single person, without exception, is saying How to Train Your Dragon 2. And that is the front runner in my model, but surprisingly close behind is Big Hero 6. And I think a lot of people have written off Big Hero 6 and every other nominee. It would not surprise me at all, because they're so close percentage-wise, to see Big Hero 6 pull out a minor upset there. So yeah, there's going to be different categories each year where sort of the common wisdom doesn't quite agree with what the math is saying. On the whole, though, intuition really does correspond with the numbers.
And before we get into some of these categories, because I do want to go through a few of these main categories with you, because it's kind of fun to do. I'm sure you've done plenty of this recently. But is there any accounting for such a thing as momentum? Because, you know, a lot of people recently have been talking about how American Sniper has the momentum, and that, you know, it's one of, you know, the American public's favorite movies this year, and a lot of people have gone to see it. Unlike a lot of the other, you know, Oscar movies, this one has made a ton of money, is incredibly popular, and people really seem to enjoy it, and it has the momentum. So is there any accounting for momentum in your equation?
So here's the thing about that, and American Sniper in particular, is that, yes, there is accounting for momentum in the sense that the award shows roughly tend to be in the same order each year. And so if doing better in later award shows actually helps a movie, then that's going to show in the data, because that would mean that the later award shows are more predictive than the earlier award shows, which is true for some categories and not for others. But as far as people seeing the movie, and a lot of people talking about that with American Sniper, I've actually studied that, and how well a film does at the box office really has no bearing on Best Picture results. So I'm not as convinced as other people are that American Sniper is a real player here. I don't even have them in the top four in my model. I've got Birdman and Boyhood, as you'd expect, but then in third and fourth, Grand Budapest Hotel and The Imitation Game. So American Sniper, to me, would still be a very, very big surprise. It didn't win the Directors Guild, the BAFTAs, the Producers Guild, the Screen Actors Guild. It did not get a Best Director nomination. There's a lot of things to look at that would point to American Sniper not being as strong a contender as some people think.
And looking through some of your predictions, I think that a lot of models out there say that a couple of the closest races are going to be Best Picture and Best Director, and you have as your top two leaders for Best Picture, you have Birdman and Boyhood, which is certainly not a surprise or different from a lot of models. Could you account for the percentage difference? Because right now you have Birdman at roughly 40%, and you have Boyhood at roughly 22%. What accounts for that difference in those two Best Picture?
Well, the whole model for each category is weighted based on how well each of these predictors has done in the past. And I don't pick the weights. I use mathematical formulas to do that for me, to make sure that I'm not biasing it in any way. But for Best Picture, for instance, the Directors Guild has the best track record in recent years, so that gets the highest weight. That was won by Birdman. The next best track record is the BAFTAs. That was won by Boyhood. And you keep going down the line, and you add up all of these weights for all of the categories, all of the predictors that each film won, and that's how I end up with my final percentages. So, roughly, Birdman took the Directors Guild, the Screen Actors Guild, and the Producers Guild, whereas Boyhood took the BAFTAs and the Golden Globes. And so when you add up the weights for each of those respective victories, Birdman comes out just barely ahead.
And it's funny because with your model, one of the things that interests me with taking the math, with using the math of recent results, is how do you factor in outliers because, you know, you predicted Meryl Streep in 2012, and that was very much an outlier. So do you take that into account when factoring in this year's races, those outliers?
No, because all I'm saying is the percentage chance each movie wins. So when I say, for instance, there's a 39.9% chance that Birdman will win, well, that means there's a 60.1% chance that Birdman loses. So that's all that's doing is accounting for outliers. That's saying there's a chance this movie doesn't win. That's why it's not at 100%, and that would be the outlier. It's not predicting outliers. When I predicted Meryl Streep, that was not saying she's an outlier, but she'll win. It was saying she's the favorite, and maybe other people haven't noticed that she's the favorite.
Certainly, we're talking with Ben Zosmer, certainly it looks like Eddie Redmayne is the favorite for actor in a leading role, but I haven't seen him so much of a favorite as you have him at. You have him at 77% and Michael Keaton a very distant second at 14%. What accounts for that huge difference between Eddie Redmayne, the clear favorite, and Michael Keaton? Because for, you know, pretty much the year, all we heard about was that this was Michael Keaton's resurgence, that this was his award to lose. But I guess the momentum of Redmayne and the award season really has catapulted him to be the clear favorite.
Yeah, you know, this might be the one category where it's a strange one, because I would say I disagree the most with all of the experts out there, and yet we come to the same conclusion. Because, like you said, everyone else tends to have Redmayne, some have Keaton, but all have him very close. Whereas, like you said, my model really has Keaton far back in second. The main reason for that is what Redmayne won. When you look at the three top predictors, which is the Screen Actors Guild, the BAFTAs, and the Golden Globe for Best Performance in Drama, well, Eddie Redmayne won 1, 2, 3. He swept all three of those. That's going to give anyone a big lead every single time. The only guy ever who won all three of those and didn't win the Oscar was Russell Crowe, and you have to go all the way back to 2001 in A Beautiful Mind. That's the only time that's ever happened. So it's very rare that you win all three of the top predictors and lose Best Actor. I don't see it happening. The math doesn't see it happening, but a lot of very smart people out there are picking Michael Keaton, so I'm sure it could go either way.
Yeah, and I guess there's no true measurement for sentimentality, because if you ask, you know, people who the sentimental favorite was in Best Actor, it would clearly be Michael Keaton.
Well, there really is a measure for sentimentality, because that can affect the SAGs and the BAFTAs and the Golden Globes just as much as it can affect the Oscars. If someone has a sentimental story in one award show, they have a sentimental story in the others, you know, unless something dramatic happened in between the award shows. And that's not really what happened with Michael Keaton. So the math does sort of account for sentimentality in, albeit a roundabout way.
What's interesting about the other awards like the BAFTAs and the Screen Actor Guilds, I mean, are we talking about a different voting body in each of these award groups?
Yes, so there's definitely in each of them some overlap with the Academy, but not a lot. So I'm not necessarily using all of these factors because they're the exact same people as the Academy voters, though that's nice when it occurs. I'm using them simply because they have a good track record of picking similar results as the Academy does.
And looking at your best actress and actress in a supporting role, there doesn't seem to be all that much drama, and I think what you have here with J.K. Simmons, sorry, actor in a supporting role, you have J.K. Simmons at 85%, Edward Norton second at roughly 7%, and then actress in a supporting role, Patricia Arquette is the favorite at 82%, and then actress is Julianne Moore. Really, I think what everyone's saying is that there's not going to be a whole heck of a lot of drama in any of those three categories, and your numbers would clearly agree.
Yeah, all three of those should look to be pretty easy victories for Moore, for Arquette, for Simmons. I mean, something could happen. When you talk about something happening, say, 80% of the time, that means if you run the numbers and you run the Academy ceremony five times, four times the movie with 80% will win, or the nominee, and one time it will not. That's what 80% means. So you're looking at a bit higher than 4 out of 5 chances for each of those three.
And what's kind of funny is that, you know, this is kind of separate from looking at these predictor models, but the Grand Budapest Hotel is kind of hanging around in some of these categories, and it doesn't seem like you'd be all that surprised if Wes Anderson won an award for original screenplay.
Oh, no, not at all. So that one I have as being extremely close, 44% for Birdman, and 40% for Grand Budapest Hotel. So that's actually the second smallest difference of the night between first and second. Grand Budapest Hotel has done quite well. It got the picture and director nominations. It won the BAFTA for the original screenplay. It won the Writers Guild as well, although, admittedly, Birdman was not eligible at the Writers Guild. So the Grand Budapest Hotel definitely has had a good showing. It didn't surprise me at all to see the math decide that there's only a 4% gap between Birdman and Grand Budapest.
And I'm amazed, frankly, to see how poorly Boyhood has ranked in your formula here for original screenplay, because all anyone ever said about Boyhood this year was that, you know, it is incredibly original. That was its greatest strength, is that it was one of a kind. Yet, as far as the screenplay goes, it ranks nowhere near as close to the two favorites, Birdman and the Grand Budapest.
Well, in fairness, I think this was a very strong year for truly original, you know, we haven't seen this before kind of movies. When you look at Birdman and Grand Budapest Hotel, that's more on the qualitative side. I don't use that in my model. But as far as the mathematical side of things, why is Boyhood not as high as you might expect? Well, it didn't win the Critics' Choice, it didn't win the Golden Globe, it didn't win the Writers Guild, and it didn't win the BAFTA, and that's the answer.
So, you mentioned animated feature earlier, and I think a lot of us would say that it's a shame that the Lego Movie was not nominated, but just a hypothetical, if the Lego Movie were nominated for animated feature, where do you think it would have ranked percentage?
I can actually answer that with complete confidence. First place. Now that might sound like the model is entirely broken and Ben's math means nothing, because of course it didn't win. It's not going to win. But that's not necessarily the case, because the group picking the nominees, it's not necessarily the exact same people who are then picking the winners based on who votes for which categories. So it's actually quite possible, had the Lego Movie been nominated and then gone and won all these other awards, that it actually might have won. So the math isn't necessarily wrong there. But without a doubt, because of all the other awards that the Lego Movie has won, most notably the BAFTAs, who until this year had never been wrong for Best Animated Picture, the Lego Movie would be in first. It's an absolutely bizarre category.
Yeah, and it's strange, because you think about the actors, actresses, and movies that weren't nominated in certain categories, and you think, you know, if they were nominated, they would have perhaps stood a better chance than some of the current nominees. Like, a lot of people talk about how Scarlett Johansson was really fantastic in Under the Skin, and if she were nominated for Best Actress, you know, she very well could have been second to Julianne Moore's
first. It's very possible. Like you said, Julianne Moore definitely still going to be in first place in that category, but certainly possible that Johansson would be higher than perhaps Marion Cotillard, who seems to be probably the last place of the five Best Actress nominees.
So if I just had to ask you, Sunday night, the end of the show, the one award that would, I guess, even taking your numbers, not even looking at your numbers, the one award that would just surprise you the most from just like a gut standpoint, what would that be?
Well, there's a bunch of categories where if you look at the fifth place movie in them, it would be almost impossible to imagine them winning. You know, take Unbroken for Best Cinematography. I have that extremely low. Or for Best Costume Design, if Inherent Vice or Maleficent were to win. But that's almost cheating, because these are nominees where we absolutely know that they don't stand a prayer, that there's very clear front runners and those movies aren't it. So probably a more fair thing to say would be looking among the second place films in each category, what's perhaps the most likely surprise. I think we talked about Best Actor. Also Leviathan. The math was not very kind to that for Best Foreign Film. It's actually just a bit behind Tangerine, so it's in third place. But that's got a lot of momentum. That wouldn't surprise me at all. So that's definitely a category where Ida, the front runner from Poland, could be knocked off. But in any of them, it's sort of an any given Sunday thing where you never know which category is going to have the big upset this year.
Switching gears a little for just a couple minutes, the movies and the Oscars don't seem to necessarily be your first love. You also are a bit of a sports fanatic. Could you tell us a little bit about your love of calling Harvard basketball and football games? How much fun is that for you?
It's been the real highlight of college for me. Yeah, I call the Harvard football games and men's basketball games for WHRB, and I run the sports department here as well, so I've called a variety of games. play-by-play in color over the years. I get to travel all over, even March Madness games and Harvard-Yale games. It's just been an absolute blast. Actually, just a couple hours from now, calling Harvard's basketball game against Penn and hoping the team can pull one out. They're tied for first with Yale right now, and as you know, that's our big rival, so it's a big game to try to keep in first place in a tie, and it's an absolute pleasure. To me, it's not all that different. You're using numbers to describe something that is inherently artistic and non-mathematical, though definitely two different sides of my interests here in college.
So when you broadcast a basketball game, does your love and understanding of the numbers, of math, how do you use those, that passion, to help enhance a listener's experience as they listen to the game?
Oh, it definitely comes in handy. The quick stuff that the listeners hear often is you can just glance at a stat sheet, and once you've been doing this long enough, you can quickly come up with things like, oh, Harvard's on a 21-2 run, even if the stat sheet doesn't provide that, because you're constantly looking at the scores. Or you can give percentages for things that they don't necessarily offer you from the NCAA stats guys, if you're able to do this stuff fast enough, which, you know, sometimes in the heat of the moment you are, and sometimes you're not. But beyond that, I am always reading blogs and websites that are notable for providing great advanced basketball stats, and I'm always trying to do my best to explain what that means for Harvard, put it in context, that even if you're not familiar with some advanced basketball stats, you can still hopefully get something out of it.
Yeah, does your audience care about advanced stats? Because for the most part, you know, basketball has been trained to understand points, rebounds, assists, you know, free throw percentage, things like that. But you get into some cooler stuff like, you know, what is it, player efficiency ratings, things like that. Are there statistics that you point to as kind of like the new age model for understanding basketball? You know, baseball, which you have experience with too, you know, the whole sabermetrician revolution has taken place, so we have a better understanding of what values matter most in baseball. But with basketball, I feel like we're on the cusp of that. Would you agree?
Yeah, I think basketball fan, with all due respect, I think you're not giving them enough credit. I think that in the past, the past decade or so, people more and more, and maybe it's just, you know, stereotypically, I am broadcasting to predominantly a Harvard audience, but I don't think it's just that, because I'm also a Sixers fan, being from Philadelphia, and so I read a lot.
I'm sorry.
Well, you know, it's been a weird week, as you might imagine, but in fairness, it's been a weird couple of years, so it's new.
Yeah.
But anyway, I think that fans more and more are starting to appreciate advanced stats, in many ways copying baseball, because that was clearly the front runner in this field and something that I'm also very passionate about. But I think that it's something that fans are becoming more receptive to once they realize that it can actually have a positive impact on their team.
And you had an internship with the Los Angeles Dodgers this past summer, is that right? And they're, you know, people sometimes get a overlook, you know, a team like the Dodgers that, you know, because they spend so much money, I think the idea is that, well, they don't look at statistics as much as other teams do, like, say, the A's. They don't value numbers, data, as much as other teams. But that's not true, right?
I think we've gotten to the point in baseball where pretty much every single team is in some way using numbers in some shape or form to try to help them win. So I think it's something where all of the teams at this point have recognized that it's one piece of the puzzle.
Okay, so you're about to graduate in the spring, and you're going to have all sorts of options waiting for you. You could, you know, go into politics, you could go into sports, you could go into the movies. If one industry came a calling, Ben Zosmer, what would be your preferred path post-college?
Well, I'm flattered, but it's actually already settled as of a few weeks ago, and it is sports. I'll be working for the Dodgers.
Oh, congratulations. You'll be working in a similar job that you held last summer? Oh, well, congratulations. So how do you like the Dodgers' chances then this year? I mean, I guess you don't have to necessarily toe the company line yet. Do you think do you like the moves they made this year?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think that it's widely acknowledged by everyone following baseball that the Dodgers should be in for a very good year. They're definitely going to be up there with the favorites in the National League, and so it should be an exciting year.
I'm interested just by the Dodgers thing, just because of the amount of money that they're able to spend, but making sure that they spend that money wisely seems like it's going to be the challenge for that front office and you in the future.
Yeah, well, I'm not in the loop yet, so I know very little, but yeah, it should be a fun place to work.
Well, Ben Zosmer, Harvard University senior and writer for The Hollywood Reporter, whose math formula, Oscar formula, is one of the most accurate out there. Thank you so much for taking the time, and we'll be checking your predictions as the Oscars unfold on Sunday.
All right, should be fun. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, it was a pleasure.